Okay. I need you to multitask this morning. Now I can see looks of fear across their faces. Okay. I need you to do two things. I need you to listen. That would help me. But also, what I want you to do, if I was to say to you, what verse epitomizes your life? What is the verse? If I said to you, pick a verse from the Bible, there would be one that would just come to mind. There would be one verse that's just part of you, that you've lived with, that you've imbibed, that has just become almost like your DNA. Okay. I want you to think about that during the time that I'm speaking. And we'll come back to that later on, okay? But I just want you to not stress over it or anything like that. But I'm sure that most people have that verse that just flies off the pages to you. So I want you to think about that as well. But James, for no other reason but that I thought this was a great little video, and it shows you what I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to ask James to put that on for me, please.
Now, where shall we go? All the disciples ran over there. Jesus asked, "Where are you going?" And they said, "I need to buy those things because I never had them before." So he ran. Then the man said, "I am blind. Please give me some money so I can live forever." Jesus ran. "If you're blind, I'll help you. I'll touch you and you'll be set free." "Open your eyes. God has saved you." "Yeah, you can see. I'm overjoyed. Yay! Yay, I'm too overjoyed."
I don't mind the term "I've saved you." I think it says it all. I'm going off to buy something that I didn't know I needed and didn't have, but I'm going for it anyway. And I just thought that the theology of children, you know, can get all mixed up. But, you know, very often there's amazing truths there when kids speak. And I'm overjoyed, you know. And, yeah, okay, got it a bit wrong and he missed the mud out and all the rest of it. But I'm overjoyed, and I don't know whether those other disciples and people were actually being knocked over in enthusiasm or falling under the spirit. I'm not quite sure. But never mind, you know, it's all the story. Okay, thanks to the guys who led the worship. You know, God is so lovely. You know, when you stand here with your knees knocking and you just think God speaks through the worship, and you just know this is, you know, a bit maybe different this morning, but God is in it, and that's the main thing. So we're going to be looking at John chapter 9, the healing of the blind man. What's incredible about this is I read this quite a while ago, a few months ago, in fact. And over the weeks, different things have been coming forward in the sort of speaking and in the worship that have just led me to look at this guy. Not so much, I'm not particularly looking at the miracle this morning, but just at this guy's whole story. We actually know very little about this guy. We know he was born blind. And yet, incredibly, this is probably one of the longest accounts of a healing. It's virtually a whole chapter, whereas very often there's just a few verses. We don't know much about him. We don't know his name. I think he would be absolutely staggered and shocked to think that in 2013, we were actually still talking about him. This guy who is an unknown. I don't suppose anybody gave him any thought, particularly as he was blind. He would have had a very difficult time in those days. Was not an amazing person. We probably just a very poor person as well, because he was blind. And yet here we are in 2013 talking about this guy. We know he was born blind. You know, we can't organise our births, which is maybe a good job, maybe a bad job, I don't know. We are born into a family, into a culture, into a country, happy families, difficult families, different cultures. But God has had a plan for each one of us right from that first moment of conception. There's been a plan. And God has placed us. So I'm not here by chance. I don't believe I'm married to Alan by chance. I don't believe I had John, David and Abby by chance. There was that amazing, fantastic plan that God had for my life. And our individual stories are absolutely vital. And over the weeks, people have talked about our stories. They've talked about the fact that we're unique, that we're individual. This man had an encounter with Jesus that would absolutely change him forever. You know, when you've been blind and now you see, what a difference that is going to make. That changes your world. That turns your world upside down. Did he realise who the man was? We're not even sure. Did he realise this was Jesus the Messiah? That's not clear. But if you've got the chance to change, if you've got the chance of being blind, and then now you can see, you're going to go for it. You're going to go for that change. You're going to go for that life. Jesus chose quite a unique way to deal with this man. Not everybody would spit in the mud and then put it on your eyes. And I'm not sure I could do that. He chose a unique way to deal with this man. And the amazing thing is when you read through the Gospels, that there just aren't any formulas. And how we would love a formula. You know, here's the guidebook to healing the blind. Step one, step two, step three. You know, here's the guidebook to, seeing people born again. Step one, step two, step three. It just doesn't work like that. Because we're unique, Jesus treats us as that unique personality. And he meets each individual person where they're at and at the point that they're at. I won't go into a lot of detail, but just a few months ago when I was looking at this, you know, you have to live things before you can tell somebody else. And I felt really God take me by the scruff of the neck one Friday. I went to a particularly strange meeting. Some of you have recounted this too. Particularly strange meeting with a couple. And to all intents and purposes, this gentleman wanted to get born again. And it wasn't really handled very well. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I was not very gracious. In fact, I was quite miffed, if I'm honest. You know, it's like, where are the four spiritual laws? Where's the discipleship course? Why is somebody not doing this? Why, this is dreadful, and I got in the car, and I'm holding on to the wheel of the car, and that was awful. That was, you know. And it was like the Holy Spirit came and said, Chris, when did I put you in charge of salvation? Since when is it your job? It's not your job. I will do my work in my way, in my time. And I thought, yes, yes. I have to learn not that I'm working for God and somehow he tags along behind, but I'm actually working with him, looking at what is he doing? How is he moving? What do I need to do to actually fit in and learn to move with him? And it's quite salutary because, you know, most of us, in fact, I think we heard yesterday at a ladies' meeting, you know, that most women do like to control things. that might be quite general, but we're organisers. We like to see things in, you know, we like to see things in right boxes and, you know, we like to sort things out. And God doesn't work like that. Now, here's a guy who's had a fantastic encounter with God. What does he do? Goes to his neighbours. Can you imagine the excitement of this guy when he goes to his neighbours? Hang on a minute, though. You know, this is something they haven't seen before. This wasn't done in the synagogue. So it's, well, yeah, but what happened to you? Well, maybe he's a twin. Maybe this isn't him at all. Maybe he wasn't blind. And suddenly the sort of cold water of cynicism begins to rush against this man. So what happened to, can you imagine this man? This is, I mean, the Bible is so full of humour as well. Can you imagine this man going to his neighbours and saying, well, actually, this guy spit on the ground and he put mud in my eye and I went to wash it and I could see. Now, come on, let's be honest. Would we have a problem with that? Probably. Probably. Well, you know, I can't see God doing something like that. I mean, that's a little bit, come on. We might have a problem with that. And so this man goes to try and share his heart and to share what God is doing. And he gets all this cold water coming back to him. No, he didn't have all the answers. He didn't know, maybe, that Jesus was the Messiah and the Son of God. And there was the virgin birth and whatever. But one thing he was absolutely certain, he was blind, but now he sees. So the theology was... But all he could tell these people was actually the reality of what had happened to him. I don't know. I don't know who this Jesus is. But I was blind, but look at, now I can see. This man has changed my life, has changed everything about me. When people used to mention, we've been in various churches and evangelism. Now, some of you are amazing, fantastic evangelists. And it oozes out of you. When I hear the word evangelism, I'm the first out the door. Scares me to death. Not me, I don't want to know. Right? Scary. I would run away in panic. And I remember being in a church where we were asked at the beginning of the year, this year you will win 5 people to the Lord. Right? So I'm the first one under the chair. Right. Over my head. That's not me. What does that mean to me? Nothing. And what God started to tell me over these last few months is we sometimes demonize almost, and that's a terrible word to use, certain words. So we think evangelist is this great big character on the pulpit, on the stage, the televangelist, you know. We can never live up to that. But God's saying that's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about is your story, your life. I'm not talking about the theology and everything else that goes with it. But what I'm talking about is your story, your life, that is the tool to reach the world. We're going to meet people that are so, and we do meet people already, that are so damaged, that are just absolutely worn down by life. I've got no hope left. There's nothing left. But here we have the story of life amongst us. You know, that's the wonderful thing. That's why God puts us in a body, isn't it? We've all got the elements of life that we bring together to make a whole that reaches the people out there. So this poor man can't convince his neighbours. So they take him to the Pharisees. And there was great rejoicing and worship and thrilled and this is marvellous. No. Their problem was, hang on a minute, this was done on a Sunday. This was the Sabbath. God would not do anything outside of our laws and rituals. These are our laws. And I think they had, you scholars, hundreds of laws. Didn't they? They had hundreds of laws. And it was like, hang on a minute, no, this is the box. This is where we live. This is how we live. God moves in this box. And so again, this poor man faces this rush of cold water as he tries to explain to him. And I wonder, looking back now, I wonder if this poor man's sort of excitement was beginning to sort of, because every time he spoke, every time he tried to share, it was like a cold water of cynicism would rush against him. And the Pharisees were convinced that God would only move within their parameters, within their laws, within their services, within their culture, within. And sadly, here was a miracle standing in front of them, and they missed it because the focus became the law and not what God was doing and not God himself and not this miracle that was happening. And it's easy for us to look back. We can be very clever with hindsight. we can look back at this man and think, oh, so ridiculous. But hang on a minute, you know, we've got our traditions. We've got our traditions. And some are lovely. Christmas family traditions, birthday traditions. Some of those are wonderful. Do we have to meet at 11 o'clock on a Sunday? Do we have to have lunch every week? Should we be doing worship at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday? When is it tradition and when is it life? And we have to start maybe adjusting our focus, adjusting where we're looking to. Is it the security of our tradition? Or is it, God, wherever you're going, I'm going. I'm going that way. I'm following that. Grab the picture, James. Now, some people, you have to be of a certain age, I think, to know what the Lord's Day Observance Society was. Not everybody really will have heard of it, but certainly maybe I think the 60s, early 70s, there was a group of people that called themselves the Lord's Day Observance Society. And basically it was to prevent sort of shops and things opening on a Sunday and to try and keep the Sabbath holy. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. The intentions were great. But I can remember at this time, I would be about 14, so I was a bit older than this little girl. Going off with friends, boiling hot day. Some of you have heard this story. Little shop, 24/7 shop, the only one in the whole town that was open, going in to get ice cream. We all went in. I, unfortunately, was the first one to come out of the shop with my lovely ice cream, straight into my Sunday school teacher. Boiling hot day, I can feel it now. Absolutely boiling hot day. The ice cream is now dribbling down my hand, and I'm getting the look from my Sunday school teacher, who says, "Christine, that's already bad, because nobody calls me Christine unless they're annoyed, all right? Christine, be sure your sins will find you out." And off she went. And I'm standing there with my ice cream. I would like to say I was so conscious that I put it in the bin, but I didn't. I ate it. Okay. Now, that lady was not horrible. She loved, we were a group of girls in Sunday school. She loved us to bits. She loved us. She gave her life for us. She was not a horrible lady. She was not vindictive. There was nothing that was sort of wrong with her in that sense. But her focus had disappeared somewhere. And the law had crept in. And instead of maybe the gentleness and grace of, you know, foolish teenagers, suddenly the law had crept in and the life. And this woman had an amazing testimony. She was a lovely lady. But we, you know, sometimes we allow things to creep in that rob us of the life that is vibrant within us and that wants to just spark and flow out. And it seeps in. We don't suddenly become focused on laws overnight. It's very insidious. It creeps in over time unless we watch what we're doing. The parents were called for. And I read this a few times because, you know, as a parent, how would I have reacted? And I don't think we can really maybe understand the situation these parents were in. You know, yes, this was their son. Yes, something had happened, but they couldn't explain it. Their whole lives were tied up in the synagogue. You know, we don't know if they stood against the Pharisees, what effect that would have had on their lives. Would it have affected the man's work? You know, the whole life was sort of affected there. So the parents rested on what they knew, which was the law, which was the synagogue, which was the Pharisees. They went back to what they knew, to where they felt safe. And you know, sometimes looking to Jesus, looking to God, looking for his moving is a scary place to be. Because you don't always know what he's going to do or where he's going to lead. And it's easy for us to rest back, to come back to the law and to rest in that. Because we feel secure. We like to feel secure. And sometimes it's easier to do that than to maybe follow and to look where, you know, where God is. And it becomes a safety net, doesn't it, for us really. And the problem is that people don't always conform to what we think they should be. The man is called back again to the Pharisees. This poor man, you just have to feel for him really. And he doesn't have the answers, but he knows he has changed. And all the sort of laws and the rituals and the years of tradition, this man, just by standing there, just blows that out of the water completely. And sometimes we've been in maybe a position or a place where we've had something in our head and we know, yes, this is it. And then God does something that just explodes that. And we have to come back and say, Lord, what are you doing? Do I need to look at this again? Do I need to home in on you again and understand what you're doing and where you're moving and what you're going to be doing? The thing I'm encouraged about is because of God's love, he will reach this generation. I'm convinced of that because of his love. But the amazing thing is that he wants to use us. And that is incredible. That is amazing. To think that we sort of maybe look at this generation and maybe to some degree panic a bit, maybe think, you know, what have I got? How can I? And yet God is going to use us to reach the people around us. Your story is vital for this generation. And I've almost sort of rushed through that first bit because there's something else that I want to do. I want us to encourage each other this morning. Your story, your life is absolutely vital for the people that we are going to meet. Your story will not make the headlines. You know, you won't be in the Sunday People or the Express or the Times, depending on what your story is. You may not make the television and have your 5 minutes of fame. Nobody may ever have heard of you. And yet your story is vital for this generation and for the people that we are going to meet. Because God has caused in us, as much as that blind man, he has caused a change in our lives. He's taken us from darkness to life. He's taken us from a state of hopelessness to hope. And to a future. He's taken us from death and he's given us life. But there are people that we're going to meet that are still in the darkness, still in the hopelessness, still in death. And I can remember as a teenager, there was a lot of books out at the time, things like Through Gates of Splendor, where Nate Saint got killed by the Alka Indians in America. There was Dave Wilkerson with the gangs in New York. And I used to think, if I had a testimony like that, you know, I could take the world. You know? If I had something like that to give, I would be able to take the world. And yet, you know, as I've grown up and grown older, I've realized, you know, that God's grace is for every moment of our lives. For every moment that we live, God's grace has covered us and has brought us through. So when we meet people who say, do you know, I'm at home all day with little ones, I'm beside myself, I don't know what to do, I can't find people, I'll say, Becky, go and have a chat with Becky. She's a mum with little ones. Go and have a chat with her. What about those people who say, I'm redundant, I've lost my image, I don't know where I am, I don't know who I am, I don't know how to cope with... Alan, go have a chat with Alan. What about those who are now retired? What, Mike and Margaret, go and have a chat with him. We're not talking about the Everest climbers. We're talking about people who are living life and are not coping. and I haven't got a hope, and I haven't got a future. And I'm just struggling to get through today. There are hundreds of thousands of families who are struggling to just get through today. And not looking to the future, and not even thinking about tomorrow. They just need to get through today. And it's the reality of life. This is life. But we are the people who found life. We are the people who found the answers to life, to those things that are hitting people every day. So for those things that are happening, you know, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about, you know, the body of people that God has given us. We have so much here. We have so much experience. We have so much that God has done in healings and deliverance and answers to prayer. And just, we have just this amazing bounty of God's provision that you almost feel it would be just so selfish to keep it to ourselves. We have this ability now to give it away and to meet the needs of the people around us. What I want to do now is I want us to encourage each other. Now, this is the point where everybody can look down at their shoes now and not make eye contact. That's usually the best thing to do. I said earlier about you thinking about your scriptures. Right, I'm not looking for 10-minute testimonies here, okay? Because I want as many people as feel they can to share. What I want you to do is I want you to share the verse that God has given you. Literally in two sentences, say why it's special to you. Now, for some, that might be too personal. You feel maybe, I just want to read the verse. Then just read the verse, okay? So I want you to just think about those verses. And as, you know, famous Blue Peter, one I've prepared earlier, just to maybe give you an idea. What I felt this morning was, everything that I've said to you, you know. This is nothing new. Nothing new. But what I want us to do together and as individuals is I want us to encourage each other. That whatever God has done in our lives is vital, is important, is to be shared. And that we will grow in confidence to share that. And to share what God has done within us with those that are around us. My verse would be 2 Corinthians 12:9, where it talks about his grace is sufficient for me because his strength was made perfect in my weakness. That was a verse I was given at my baptism a few years ago. But I've discovered through life, through redundancy, through a child who was ill, through we almost lost our home at one point, through illness, he has been faithful. He has been my strength. He has been my absolute, total sufficiency. So what I did, because I'm a coward, I also asked Alan to get one ready as well, just in case. Just in case. So I asked Alan earlier if he would do one. But what if I can ask you, please, if you would just... I want the body to be blessed. I want you to hear what God is doing and has done in people's lives and be blessed. So if you can stand when you give the verse, just so everybody can hear, that would be really great. Thank you, Alan. Have you finished? Lovely. What? Thank you to everybody for sharing that. Thank you. Be encouraged. Just look at the pearls of wisdom and the jewels that we have got here. Look at the incredible experience that we have got to give away. Give away. Let's be open-hearted. Let's be open-handed and give and give away. If you can you put the last bit on for me, James? At the beginning of the week, I just felt God give me Aurora Borealis, which doesn't is not normally part of my life. So I went on to the YouTube just to have a look and to see a little bit from it. It's incredible. I mean, the aurora is just the most amazing creation. You know, when you see the colours and just how it moves and flows, it is just absolutely fantastic. But I felt God, and I'm going to actually read it because I don't want to change anything that I felt God say to me, but I just want you to watch that, but I want you to just hear what I felt God give me. And I felt God say to me, "You are more beautiful to me than this. I've watched over you. I've seen your struggles and your tears, and I've seen those moments of joy. And my heart has been delighted as you've sought after me in every circumstance of your life. But I'm going to cause you to be that light in the darkness, a light that shifts and changes as my spirit moves upon you, and it will cause the darkness to dissipate. Your stories will no longer be hidden away, but will become a part of that glorious, spectacular light that will draw people to me." You are more beautiful than that. What? But God, looking down, sees his church, sees the stories that we've got on our hands, and says, "You are more beautiful to me than that. You are more precious to me." Okay, I'm just going to pray. I'm feeling at the moment not to sing. Is that all right, Pete? Okay. What I'm going to encourage you to do, though, is just for the next few minutes, I'm going to pray, and then particularly, you know, people may have said things that really blessed you this morning. I just feel so blessed hearing what you guys had to say. Use these moments to go and encourage, to go and bless somebody, to go and say, "Do you know what you said? Just so bless me. Just so encourage me." Share together, because that's where the strength, that's where the light, that's where the unity will come from, as we encourage and bless each other. And if we can encourage and bless each other, then we can help each other to go out and share as we go out into the world. So I think that's what we'll do, if that's okay. We'll just pray and then go and encourage each other. Go and bless each other just for 5 or 6 minutes, okay? Father, I want to thank you for my brothers and sisters. I want to thank you for the openness of heart, for their willingness to share. Father, I want to thank you for this group of people that I know you've brought us through so many difficult situations. But you've brought us through, and you've brought us through together. Father, I want to thank you for all the amazing lives, for all the amazing stories in this room, for all those jewels, all those pearls of wisdom, all those experiences of you and of your power and of your grace. Father, I just pray that you will make us bold, that you will cause us, Lord, to be able to share these stories, to meet the needs of those people that we meet. Lord, just anoint us afresh. Lord, put words within our mouths. Take charge of our tongues as we share you, as we share your wonderful, amazing provision for mankind. And Father, that we can be a part of that. How incredible is that? Lord, we pray that you will use us, that you will bless us, that you will encourage us, that you will give us fruit. Lord, as we share our lives with those that we come across. Just bless us. Bless, Lord, each person who is part of our church here, Lord. Encourage us. Move us forward in all that you've got for us. Thank you, Father. Amen.